This is April the 10th in the year 2001, and this is Bob Gilgore interviewing Clark Edgerton at his home in Durham at 614 Cecil Street. Good morning, Clark.
Good morning, Bob.
It's a pleasure to be here and to meet you. I've heard so much about you and the band from people I've interviewed, so I thank you for your time in advance.
Certainly.
We had just been talking, and you said that you grew up in Durham, so I will just ask you another question instead of what was it like growing up in Chapel Hill. Can you tell me about your background, where you went to school, and how you got into music?
Oh, I'm from Durham, and of course I went to Hillside High School, and I think my first encounter with instrumental music was from a man named William Lanky Cole. He was a great piano player back in those days. He also played trombone. And my mother was able to get him to give me piano lessons once a week. I think it was $1 a lesson back in those days. And of course, I was one of those players that played the work with me on the clarinet and a little bit on the piano, but mostly the clarinet. And I had my baseball and football, all those things tucked away under the piano bench and that kind of thing. And lots of times many of the boys would be out on the front waiting for me to get through with my rehearsal. But I stuck with it and really enjoyed it. One summer with Lanky Cole working with me on the clarinet enabled me to get into the Hillside High School band, and I think my band director then was Fillmore Hall, which we call Shorty Hall, and he recognized right away that I had some potential. So I just took off with that clarinet and was able to get into the marching band. And for 4 years, that's what I did. I played clarinet and moved from clarinet to learn to play the oboe. I think the first oboe that Hillside received, we had a contest, and of course three of the first clarinet players had to try out for it. And I won out, and I played the oboe. I'm certain that those 4 years with Shorty Hall really encouraged me to go into music. And I wasn't quite certain at that time because I was doing a part-time job at Lincoln Hospital where I was taking x-rays. One hospital to another. And during that time, Lincoln Hospital, they would hire someone, and I was the one that they hired to for that little job. It was $7.50 every 2 weeks. And I would stop by after school in the afternoon, and I would go to the lab. They would give me several x-rays and bus fare, and I would go from Lincoln Hospital right down the street there and catch the bus. You catch the bus, you would go to Five Points, and there you'd have to get a transfer to go to Duke. And I would go to Duke. I knew exactly where to go, and there I would give them a set of x-rays for the doctors there to read and pick up a set that they had read and bring them back. And that was my little job. So during that time, I was very close to the laboratory technician. It was Margaret Goodwin. And she sort of let me piddle around in the lab and so forth. And I had gotten an interest in being a laboratory technician. And I really enjoyed that. But After graduation and moving on to college, I pursued music a little further, and I think my second year is when I decided to major in music. I said, this is what I really enjoy.
Where did you do your college training, Clark? And
that was at North Carolina College, which is now North Carolina Central University. And any Saturday from 9 o'clock until 4:30 or 5 in the afternoon, you could find me in one of the practice rooms working on my skills. And being certain that the marches and the things that we played, I wouldn't have to have the little lyre that goes on the clarinet to read the music. I had mine memorized, and I just loved to do that, you know. It came in very handy. So, and after North Carolina Central, I went into teaching and had some experiences in band. Of course, the first one was at Warrington. First year, and the next year was at Lincoln High School.
So you graduated North Carolina College in
56.
And then you were at Warrington High School?
It wasn't Warrington High School. It was called John R. Hawkins.
Uh-huh.
In Warrington, North Carolina. And that year was my first year doing band. So I had the band, safety patrol, Boy Scouts, bus duty. I taught two classes of music and three classes of social studies. And at the time when we had lunch period, or activity period, they would call it, that's when I would have to do instrumental repair on the new instruments that we had. They had a nice repair kit there, but there was no money there for instrumental repair and no money for music. So any music that I got, I either bought it or wrote it out myself. And instruments that we repaired, I did it myself or worked it into a class situation. My principal, J.S.D. Byers, he says, that's a music class, you do as you choose. So I did that. Did a lot of music, but we also did some instrumental repair, so I would have a band that would function properly.
And then what year did you come to Lincoln?
That was the following year, just one year at John R. Hawkins, and then it was 5 years at Lincoln High School.
Starting
56, 57.
To 61.
Yeah.
When you were at North Carolina College, now North Carolina Central University,
surely.
How many instruments did you learn how to play?
Gee, in order to major in music and finish in instrumental music as I did, you learn all of them. And I was very fortunate when I attended North Carolina Central, I was pretty good on the drums, clarinet, oboe, saxophone, and so when I started North Carolina College, I already had those instruments pretty much mastered. Then I started with the bassoon. And then the string instruments, of course, gave me the most problems, but I enjoyed those also.
That's incredible. Well, I want to focus on Lincoln.
Surely.
And so let me just ask you a broad question. Tell me your memories of Lincoln High School.
It was a wonderful experience because I consider that to be my first best job. Because my first job was at Hawkins, but the real challenge was at Lincoln High School. And I was fortunate to be able to go there after my student teaching. Now, when I was at North Carolina College, I did student teaching in Chapel Hill under J.Y. Bell, was the band director there. In between the time I went to Warrington and taught there for a year, the job at Lincoln High School became available. J.Y. Bell called me and asked me if I wanted. I said, yes. If you know where Warrington is, it's off the beaten track. And the principal there knew. They said, I know you're a suitcase teacher, so you have to have two sets of lesson plans and all this, you know, so of course you may not come back and blah. But anyway, I was able to go back to Lincoln High School and actually teach some of the students that remembered me as a student teacher there. What would it be? Two years ago. And so, I had two classes there that I could sort of relate to. So I got off to a real good start with those students. And they were just fantastic. Anything that I said we should do, they said we can do it. And that's what I enjoyed most about them. And they had so little. We had to repair instruments. You know, $45, I think, was my entire budget. I thought that was something, considering that my other school didn't have nothing. So.
Was that a repair budget? Or
that was it. That was the budget. That was the budget. That included music, repair, and anything else that you were going to do. And so I had to use that wisely. So we had to depend quite a bit on gifts of instruments from the community. Fundraising, all of those things were incorporated. And there again, even with the band that I was working with, there again I had the safety patrol, and I had a home loan, and they had to have the May Days and all this type of thing, which you are responsible for. And I was also the junior class advisor, which means that you have to be responsible for getting the juniors and your prom together and all those type of things. So I really enjoyed that experience. I have a schedule somewhere, but I wasn't able to locate it. But it was a tight schedule. And in addition to the commute from Durham to Chapel Hill, which at that time I think we called it 9 miles. Now I don't know what it is. And it was only didn't take you long to get there. Now it takes you almost 45 minutes to go just that distance.
What time did you get to work in the morning?
I was always early. I'm an early bird now. I was there about 7:30, quarter to 8.
And home at what time?
5:30, 6.
Let's go back to the band and I'm interested in what you know about the history of the band, when it started, who started it, how the children learned the music.
I'm not sure of the history of the Lincoln Band. I can't go back any further than I can remember than Jasper Bell, J.Y. Bell. I know that there was a small group. It wasn't that large. I also know that he believed in the same thing that I believe in. And marching is great, but the concert band is better. And we did a lot of work with the concert band as well as the marching band. Marching band you know, you get the public, more of the public involved when you do march event. And for your satisfaction, you have those kids in there. When marching season is over, it's just, we're going to play something nice, some Wagner and Tchaikovsky, some things like that, you know. Which they really enjoy. They, you know, once they get into it, they may shuffle their feet a little bit to start, and then as we make the little progress, they said, this was great.
Who taught the children how to play their instruments?
During the time I was there, you had your beginner program, which fell to Vanderbilt. So you actually get to start the kids on the instruments and then sort of bring them along through to the high school, which I was able to do for 4 years, 5 years.
So did you go back to Northside Elementary and teach there?
I don't know what it was called, Northside. Maybe it was. Yes, I did. That was, I would do that 2 or 3 times a week. I'm not sure how that schedule worked, but yes, I did that.
Went to it was originally called Orange County Training School, and then they changed it.
To Northside. Northside was, it's coming back. Yes, I would go there, had a beginner program, I would teach the class there and then come back to the high school and work with the high school students.
What a schedule.
Oh yes, definitely. And I also had two classes, I'm thinking. Two classes in social studies that I taught in high school.
So, what was the first grade where instruments were offered to students at Northside?
I want to say fourth grade, but it may have been the fifth grade. I'm not certain. I know that we did start instruments in the fourth grade at here in Durham, and I'm not certain about Chapel Hill, but it was fifth or sixth grade. I'll say that, to be on the safe side.
So you had a farm system coming in.
Surely, and that's great when you can start a student, and then he's responsible to you right on through until high school. That's great, because it was a little different in some other situations where you, a high school teacher and somebody else starts your program and you have to take what they send you. And that was the case after I moved from Chapel Hill. But in Chapel Hill, I was able to use the same students that I had started, because I was the band director. There was no assistant. No other help.
Did you feel that the students gained more than a musical education from being in the band?
Oh, certainly. There were so many lessons to be learned being in the band situation, because you work together as a family, and so many of those students that I taught actually looked to me as the dad, or later it was Big Daddy. Back then I guess it was Little Daddy, because I was much smaller than I am now. But a lot of the parents would come to me and say, Mr. Edgerton, talk to Little Johnny, or talk to Little Mary Jane, or, you know, I won't call it any names, because they have so much respect for you. They just love you and so forth, and they're not doing this, that, and the other in their subjects and all, but they love the band. And lots of times I had to be the middle person there to get little Johnny back on track, be sure that he's going to his classes and so forth, and getting the education that his mom wanted him to have. And there were some cases, as I guess you found out, that there may not have been a daddy or father in the home. So I played the role of that father figure for many of those students. And I'm sure they got a lot out of it. And, pardon me. Many years later, you know, you may hear some come back and say, you did so much for me, and how much they enjoyed the program and what it meant to them. And even though that some of them were in the band, they also, they were under my tutelage for social studies. And in my social studies class, it was small, that first part, first semester, I think it was. But during that time, I didn't just teach social studies. I came back to Durham and talked about foreign countries and so forth. And I bought a little can of fried baby beans. I also bought a bar of chocolate-covered ants. And it was one other, something, escargot or something. I forgot now. It was one other thing that we got, but we didn't get to that. But I carried that back and introduced it to the students, and we opened that can of fried baby bees and started a little taste thing there, and the students just loved it. I mean, they said, oh, they didn't enjoy it first, you know. But I was going to be the guinea pig, so I tried one of those fried baby bees. It had a nut-like quality, but I went ahead and tried it, and then some of the others tried it. And that second semester, my class was running over with students. I mean, because I was doing something different. It was just right in the book, you know. We ventured out and did things a little different. And of course, naturally, really got back to the principal. He says, "What's this about fried baby bees in your classroom?" I says, "Well, you know, in those other countries, many of the countries, they do that. I mean, this is a staple." And so they really enjoyed that. And the same way with the band, we didn't always do things like the white high school band. We lifted the instruments up and had it looking a little flashy for marching, you know, and did little steps and things, which the crowd always appreciated. Yeah. And yet and still, at the end of the marching season, we were able to go in and take the same music that the White House School was using for concert. We could take that music and also play it, even though we had some inferior equipment and so forth. I was able to make adjustments. I remember once tearing the band to a contest, and it called for French horns. I didn't have any French horns. We had what they call it, mellophone. So anytime I found something that mentioned music or instrumental music, I read it. And I found out that you could get an adapter for this mellophone that you could put a French horn mouthpiece in and get that French horn quality of sound. You know, I took two of those mellophones, got the adapter, because this money's coming out of my pocket, and the French horn mouthpiece, and worked with those students on that. And when we went to contest, they said, "Nice French horns." Those are mellophones. They were the judges, you know, they were just so impressed. They said, "Oh, good French horn sound." I says, "Okay, right." They were using they were playing the French horn part. It was the F horn part. They were using the French horn mouthpiece, but it was actually E flat mellophone that they were playing.
Fascinating.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, I hear so many people comment to me about how wonderful the marching band was. And you've touched on a little bit about the moving the instruments, maybe high stepping. Can you describe a little bit more what a parade was like for the Lincoln High School marching band?
Oh, that was the top. That was the top of the thing. If it's going to be a parade, you could expect to have a good turnout. They used to say, oh, they're going to show out. I didn't ever like that term so much, they're going to show out. But they did use that. And it was a chance for the students to say, look, Mom, what I can do, you know. And it gave them so much pride to be in a marching band. And everybody was dressed alike. We all stepped together and we played music together. And it's just a wonderful feeling. I just get goosebumps just thinking about it right now, at the way the crowds would just cheer us on, and especially when we got up there by Fowler's for the Christmas parade. We had just one parade and two parades, homecoming parade and the Christmas parade. Get up there by Fowler's food store, and all of the white students from the university come down to see the Lincoln Band, you know, and they would just egg us on. And the students just enjoyed that, and they would step high, and they played well, and they enjoyed the discipline. I'm a real funny guy, and we can have all the fun in the world, but they knew when it came time for that marching band or that concert band, I was a different person. I had two personalities. Time to get this job done. There was no fooling around. And they accepted that discipline. And even today, when I retired in 97, I still had that same discipline. The students were wearing caps in the halls and wearing their pants, slouching. But not in my band room. Everything changed once you hit that door. And of course, I'm happy that I'm out now, because maybe somebody would have challenged me, but but they didn't. And it lasted for 41 years, so I kept that same purpose. And I found that things seem to work much better when the student knows you mean business. Like James Scott Fan or whatever that thing comes on the television. I meant business, and they knew that. So they enjoyed it because we got good results by doing it that way.
Did you, along the parade route, stop and do any dance steps or any kind of routines?
That was the highlight, sure.
What were they like?
Oh, great. I mean, whatever was popular during that time, I would try to score out some music for them, if it wasn't but 20 measures or so. But whatever was popular during that time, I wouldn't want the ASCAP to come after me, but you could get a record or something, and they had the tapes back there, get a record and listen to it and sketch out a little something for your band, and they would play the latest thing. And everybody enjoyed it. And the majorettes would make up the little dance steps. Of course, in my early years, I guess I was making up some of them, but as time went on, actually I couldn't keep up. But they'd make up the little dance steps, and we would stop and perform, and that was a highlight. That's what the people, they really enjoy that.
Did any of the children trail along behind the band and try to copy what they were doing?
Yes.
How big?
I guess you heard that. I've been known to be the Pied Piper in music, because once the Lincoln Band would come along, people would sort of follow along with it. I loved it. I enjoyed that, and I always march with the band. A lot of the my colleagues said, "You don't march with the band?" I said, "Oh yes, I do. I'm right there because I want to be sure everything is going to be like I would like for it to be." You'd have to keep some of the public from coming out and bothering the girls. You know, your majorettes, yeah, your pretty girls out there stepping in. They want to come out and make a date or something. But naturally, I was up there, and I wouldn't allow that.
did you lead them, or did you just march?
I marched right along there beside the trombones. I was always on the first row. The first row is trombone. Excuse me.
But one of the students led the band.
Oh, yes. I have a drum major. And believe it or not, my drum major for a couple of years was also one of the star football players. And even at the homecoming parade, they said, "Well, you're not going to be able to get I may call his name Jimmy, to lead the band because he's on the football team. We got a game tonight." And so I talked to Bradshaw. Bradshaw said, "Oh, yeah, you can use him because he needs to exercise. Go ahead." So we would do the homecoming parade with the drum major that's also going to be the quarterback for the winning football team.
That wasn't
that
Doug
night.
Clark, was it?
No, that wasn't Doug.
Because I know he was the drum major, but he was also quarterback on the football team.
Yeah, and
so he wasn't the only one.
No, he was not the only one. This was, I want to say Jimmy Little. I'm not sure. No. You may have to take that out. It wasn't Jimmy Little. I can't think of his name now. But I do know we had.
Well, how do you measure the excellence of a band or an orchestra? Did you have competitions, and did you get ranked?
Sure. Yes, and I did give you a couple of articles, which at that time it was contests where 30 or 40 bands would meet in Greensboro. And I think at that time it was competition. It was called a festival, called Music Festival. But that was one of the highlights for the students in the concert band, which they were all also in the marching band. And we would go to that competition and be judged by three judges. They would give you a list of music to choose, and you would choose three pieces and a march, and you would learn those, and then you would perform. And the judges would judge you. At that time, I recall, they would judge you, and you could make one, two, three, or four in grade, one being your highest grade. And at first was a sort of a local type thing, regional they called it. And if you made a one or a two, which were the two highest things, then you'd get to go to the state competition. And the state competition was normally in, it seemed like to me it was in Greensboro. And in the state competition, there you would have the best bands. They had all had made either one, a superior or an excellent, together. And then that's when you get the big prize. They would rate you again as one, two, three, and four. And I'm happy to say we never made a three. We always one or two. And we did get some excellence, but most of it was superior. I think those excellence should have been superior, but...
Spoken like a true father.
That's right. They should have been superior. They were picking on me.
So, do you happen to recall what the band or orchestra record was for the 5 years that you were there?
Oh, no. I don't want to guess that.
But you were always excellent or superior, or two?
I know that for a fact, yes.
Even in the state competition?
Sure.
That's
yes.
Wonderful.
Sure.
Can you tell me something about the uniforms? How did you get the uniforms, and what were they like?
I inherited those uniforms. And as I recall, they were first orange and black. And the students didn't like that orange and black. And I think we finally went into a black and gold. It was black with gold piping. And much better to look at, a little easier on the eye.
It wasn't Halloween looking.
It wasn't Halloween.
As you mentioned before.
That's right. A little easier on the eye.
And so that they were inherited, you already had those. You didn't have to go out
and
raise them.
You had some, and I think we did have a fundraiser, and I tried to add on a few of those as the group grew, because we did get a little larger during my 5 years.
Do you remember the PTA?
Yes.
And can you tell me something about the PTA? Did they work for you? Did they raise money for you?
The PTA, in conjunction with the little booster group, of course, your PTA would be for the whole general school, but within the PTA, naturally, you would have some parents who would sort of spin off and just work primarily for the band. And we were able to do some fundraisers. I remember one fundraiser, and I remember several, but I remember one fundraiser when the ballpoint pen first came out. I was able to get that fundraiser and saw it in a little catalog, and I had the orange and black ballpoint pens, and the band parents, those parents helped me get those things done. And we made good money selling those ballpoints. First, it was a novelty. It was the first thing out, you know. It said, oh, here's a ballpoint pen. They were terrible because when you wrote with them, if you touched it, it was all on your fingers and so forth. It's hard to get off. But it was still a better than the old dipping the well with the ink, you know, and write with that pen. So that was a good fundraiser. And there was so much talent among my band parents. They made doll clothes and sold them. Clothes for dolls, can you imagine? And they were able to make those things and sell them in the out into the community. Naturally, you know, most of the, well, just about all of them, at least 95% of the students' parents that I worked with, they worked for the university. They worked at the University of Laundry, or they worked in service, and sometimes they worked both. They were somebody's maid or butler, or they worked at the University Laundry. There were a few, but there were a few professionals. There were school teachers, the parents of the children I'm speaking of now. There were school teachers or in other businesses like contracting and something like that that would have the high stakes, but for the majority of those students, their parents were in service or working at the university laundry, some of those types of jobs.
So the PTA helped you raise money.
Oh, sure.
And the money was used for instruments, uniforms,
yeah.
Travel?
All of the above. Uh-huh.
Where did you practice?
Marching band was in front of the school, right on the field. There was a large field, and I think you have a picture of that. And to get the practice for the parade, we actually got out on the street there in front of the school, and you know, that would be dangerous now. But I could stop the traffic and let the band march down so we could get some street experience, you know, so I know how I was going to line my band up and so forth, and marched on down, what was the name of that street?
Merritt Mill?
Merritt Mill Road, right. See, you have all that.
No, well, I know it. I've been there.
Come right down Merritt Mill Road and turn off and go right on down the little driveway and on to our schoolyard. But we would do that at least once during the school day. You know, we would do that maybe right after school. We could do that and have that in. The early morning practices that I did, of course, was for concert band. I'd get there early and go in and do a little something before the basketball team started practicing on the floor. We were up on the stage, so we had to practice in what we call the gymtorium. And we didn't have an auditorium, it was a gymtorium. But it served its purpose, and my band room was on the stage. And the year that I left, they finally decided that I was worthy of having a band room. So R.D. Smith and his shop crew had knocked out a wall for two rooms and was going to surprise me with a band room that year. And that's when I got a call for the job here in Durham.
Where, at the Hillside?
At the Whitted Junior High.
Whitted Junior High.
Junior High. Paid a lot more money. And had my first child. Was just a baby. And so it was no question that I was going to leave that job and take this one. Because of getting my family started and so forth. So that's when I left.
So you shared where they practiced football, that field outside Lincoln,
sure,
with the football team.
Sure.
And you shared the gymtorium
with
the basketball team.
I sure they did. And also the, don't forget, all of the Bradshaw's athletic gym classes were here right there in that same complex. That was the gymtorium. So if he was working on volleyball and they weren't outside, they were inside. But my band program had to go home.
Did you ever have any problems in arranging times and any rancor there? It sounds as though you were pretty pressed for space and time there.
Oh, sure. I imagine you won't pick up on some of the some of the dirt like reporters do, but there wasn't any. We had some moments where we would say, listen, I need such and such, and are you going to be here at such and such a time? And all. We were always able to work it out. We were both young, we were both energetic, we wanted the best for the kids, so we were able to work it out.
You had mentioned that you played in the parades, the marching band,
sure,
played in parades. Where did you go with the marching band? What parades did you play in? You mentioned homecoming and Christmas parade. Homecoming for Lincoln.
Yes. And those were the two parades right there at in Chapel Hill. Outside of Chapel Hill parade, I'm not sure. I have to work on that a little later.
Can I bring up some names? Hillsborough, Pittsburgh, Durham. Do you remember any of those places?
I'm sure we did. I'm sure we. Hillsborough, which was right around the corner, I remember. Remember those guys coming to us, and I'm sure we went to them for some parades and so forth.
When you performed at the football game, did you do any special things on the field?
Well, the halftime special, yes. That's what? Just like your parades, and you stop and do a performance. You have a halftime show, and If you have the visiting band, of course, you divided the time, and it was always customary to allow the visiting band to perform, and then you would come on later and and do your performance. And you would work out a halftime show, just like you see on television. Today, it was really a little more complicated, I think, back during those days, because we were marching 8 to 5 and we had to sit down and figure exactly where everybody was going to be at a particular point in a march. So at 16 steps, you're supposed to make a turn, and everybody had a sheet to follow and so forth. And I stayed up many a night past 12 o'clock working on those things. And sometimes with the drum major, you know, we just sit down and we had to get it together so that everybody would know what they were supposed to do. And after we get that drill, that would be your drill, you get your drill done with your march and so forth. Then you'd have the little pageantry part there where you'd make up different formations. I think we did something called Soul Train or something popular. And we made a TV set with the little antennas and things like that, you know.